Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. I'm so glad to be here with you as we take a modern look at business building. I'm so glad to have you here with us. We love getting together and talking about living and loving and thriving in all that we do in our life and business. I do want you to be a thriving entrepreneur, whether you are running multiple companies or one really cool company that's your own, or you're just simply running the business that is your life and all the things that it takes to get through. You are definitely and need to be a thriving entrepreneur. And I love being able to spend this time together with you to take a look at some of the things that are going on in the world, bring to you some really amazing guests, and just spend some time together talking about things that can make your life and your world better. I love being able to be here to do that for you, and I love meeting here with you. As I said, today we're taking a look at a modern look at business building. A modern look at business building versus, well, you know, these days modern look could be versus, you know, a year or two ago even. It's interesting when you start getting into technology space and software space and stuff like that, just how quickly things can move. And now with the advent of AI, I mean, what we're doing in AI today, we may have dreamt of doing 6 months ago, but the applications and stuff couldn't quite do it. And, you know, even as little as 6 months ago and a year or 2 years ago, though there are people that we've had here on the show that have been in AI for, you know, going on a decade or more, the changes are so quick. So rapid. They happen so fast. And I really just love being able to take a look at, well, what's happening today? This modern look at business building will be outdated all too quickly. But in the meantime, you can look at some of the concepts that are being done right now. And even if you're like, well, that's kind of a little bit out of date now, you could be like, yes, but the concept behind that is really powerful. It's really interesting because, you know, the older I get, the more that I listen to people's new modern takes on sales and marketing, the more that I hear them saying things that people who were, you know, not even my mentors, they were stuff that like my mentors were giving me recordings of their mentors' recordings, you know. So I'm talking about in the, you know, early to mid 80s, people that had done recordings in the 60s, you know, were being given to me by the mentors that I was working with. And it's interesting to hear some of the things that they were teaching way back then is really the heart and soul and core of most of the kind of things that we still do. There's some different takes to it. Of course, obviously, there wasn't email in 1960, but that doesn't necessarily diminish the concept of community, of friendship, of acquainting yourself, of being somebody that cares enough to be able to help bring something to a person. And so when we take a modern look at business building, I really encourage you to have a mind today towards not just the cool stuff these people are doing, and hopefully some of the things they can do to help you with your company, but also some of the ways that they're innovating, that they're doing things now that are, again, perhaps even the same concept as you've always done it, but with just a little different approach, using a new technology or a new system or a new concept to be able to do the things today in the way that's the most effective today. And I think that's the best way for us to really take a modern look at business building and how that can apply in your life and help you be a thriving entrepreneur. We do have three really great, amazing guests, and I think we should jump right into the first one right now. Join me in welcoming Joe Rare. Hey, Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Oh, I'm a family first guy. So number one is my two daughters and my wife, and then of course all the animals and everybody who calls this home. And then we're an outdoor enthusiast family, do a lot of that stuff. And entrepreneurship is how I have the freedom to be able to do those things that I enjoy.
I love that. Tell us a little bit about your company and the things you do.
Well, so I have a virtual assistant services company. I own a marketing agency, a software company, as well as we just launched a freight dispatching company. And then I also have a data resolution business. So quite a few things going on, but I'm a fan of building businesses and then having my team run the companies so that I can position myself as a strategic investor or a strategic advisor and an investor in the companies.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you're not doing anything right now. You're just kind of hanging out, playing with the kids. So what do you find I even want to know how to answer this question the right way. There is that distance between a great idea and the systems to put it in place and the money for you to not have to work 60 hours a week yourself in it. How do you go beyond that point where you can be free of it and the company still exists on its own? What's the secret?
Well, the secret is processes and systems. If you're going from zero to one, the first step is to figure out whether you have something viable, which is go ask the market. And a lot of people really get a hold up on this place. And this is where we've been able to build multiple companies because we do this. I think we do this really, really well, which is take an idea, take a concept, flesh it out as far as you need to figure out if somebody will pay for it. Then instead of saying, well, does anybody think this is a good idea? We literally just go sell it and literally make people buy it. Even though we may not have it to fulfill yet, we can create the fulfillment process after we have somebody who pays for it. And so we've been really, really good at trying to get somebody to say yes first before we run down the road of building processes and teams and systems and all of these things. If nobody wants what you have to offer, it doesn't matter how great your systems are on the back end. And so we start off with, let's go get a bunch of yeses. Let's get people to say yes to whatever it is that we're selling. And then we will build the processes on the back end. We'll put the right people in place. Not saying that you don't go in without any idea how to fulfill the services, but or fulfill the product or whatever it is. You know how to do it. You just don't put people in place to go execute this big, huge operation that doesn't even exist because nobody's giving you money. And then from there, once you do have somebody in there, you build the processes, the SOPs as you go in real time. You've got cash flow coming in. You reinvest the cash flow into the results, into the fulfillment. You put a team in place or a process in place, however deep it needs to be or expansive it needs to be. And then from there, you have a fulfillment process that's proven and you can go get more customers, put them into the system. They come out the other end as happy paid, clients, and they're getting what they're paying for. And then you just put more people and more people in place, whether it be, and more people could be one, it could be 10, to handle sales, to handle fulfillment, to oversee those people. And you step further back and further back and further back until you're no longer needed in the operations. And then you can just simply review. So it sounds probably more complicated than anybody would hope. But the reality is once you do it once, you can replicate it over and over as many times as you want.
See, and I was going to go the other way with it. I was going to say, you make it sound so easy, but in the reality of it, I wonder how many of us really actually get to that place where we remove ourselves from the equation.
They don't. And that's the reason that, entrepreneurship is so challenging from my point of view, looking at the entrepreneur landscape is that unfortunately, most people start a business in order to create some level of freedom, whether that's time freedom, financial freedom, the freedom to do their own thing their way. everybody goes in with this grand idea, but the reality is very, 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 very few people actually get freedom out of their business. They typically trade the 9 to 5 for a 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. type business, right? Where it never shuts down 7 days a week. And that's the reality of where most entrepreneurs go. And so they don't position themselves out of their business. They don't put themselves out of a job where they can be an entrepreneur. You know, I don't look at day-to-day operations. I look at what are the results of everybody's day-to-day operations as it matters to our big grand picture, right? I don't care about, okay, who dealt with what? If there's a fire, guess what? Somebody in that division needs to handle it, not me. And if it comes to me, we have a way bigger problem. And so I'm hoping that my team is taking care of the things that need to be taken care of. And then I can guide the business to the big vision that we have.
And you kind of glossed through something that was so powerful that I want to go back to it and have you talk more specifically about it. And that's sales. Yes. A good friend of mine used to say, nothing happens until a sale is made. So how do you get the good qualified leads, you know, not just people who want to waste your time, but really good qualified leads, and then train, or do you already have just a set group of sales guys that are just so awesome that everything you come up with, they go out and sell? How do you do that piece of it?
Well, for me, and I mean, I can speak from my own experience, but you know, the way that I do it is I'm a sales guy through and through. Sales and marketing is like my jam. So I will always be the first one to put my blood, sweat, and tears into an idea. If I can't go sell my idea, it won't sell, because nobody's going to outsell me on my own idea. And so if I can't go execute it, nobody else is going to. So the idea is a flop. But once I know that we have something, I simply take what I know, how I pitch somebody, where I believe the pain points are, the objections and all those things, and typical sales, you know, training type stuff. And then I document it. I record sales calls. And then I put somebody in place who's going to take that role and do that part of it. Now, the lead part of it, the leads can come from anywhere, and it depends on your niche. It depends on your service offering. It could be that you run ads to get leads. It could be that, you know, you do a podcast and hopefully somebody sees, you know, my screen behind me, and then they decide, hey, what's that? And let's go check it out. However it is that you're going to generate leads, wherever your audience is, I can say the Facebook ads are great, or Instagram is great, or TikTok's great, or YouTube, but that depends on the niche, right? You know, so where are you getting the best leads? It really depends. You know, some of our businesses, we get leads from a list. Our truck dispatching, freight dispatching company, right? We get them from a list. We cold call or cold email outreach to these people, and that's how we get all of our business. So that's one way. So it really kind of depends, but when it comes to sales, you're right. Nothing happens until there's a sale made, which is why I'm so adamant about taking that first step and actually making an attempt to create a sale. Go out and actually get somebody to give you money. If they don't believe in what you're selling and they're not willing to give you money for it, you don't have anything. So everything else that happens after the sale doesn't exist until you obviously get that sale, that first one.
Okay, so let's flip the script on you a little bit for those of us that are great salespeople, because let's face it, most really good salespeople are not great operations people. The nitty gritty of operations drives us nuts. Yep. Do you have somebody that's part of your team that always sets up the operations for you, or what is your system to be able to put operations in place behind all these sales that you just dropped on the table?
Well, I mean, the operations piece is the part that you better know what's to come. If you don't know how to fulfill the thing that you're selling, well, then you probably aren't going to be, you know, selling, because part of the idea is the fulfillment, is how are we going to deliver this service or this product? Then it matters putting somebody else in place to oversee it. The way that I started, well, I restarted, but the model that we built for our processes has been pretty simple. I hire one person, a virtual assistant, to prospect day and night to set me up with opportunities to talk, just get in a conversation with my ideal prospect. They might be prospecting via cold email. They might be using social media and doing direct, you know, direct messaging, LinkedIn, whatever. Maybe we're running ads and they're trying to set me with appointments. But more importantly, if they can get me in a conversation, It doesn't have to be a set appointment. Maybe it's a text message conversation. Maybe it's a DM. I don't care which one. I know that in the beginning, if I just step into that conversation, I can work my way through it, figure out if there's an opportunity. So we do that first. Next, I close the sale. After the sale is closed, we have to fulfill the service. So I pump the brakes on sales and I turn over to fulfillment and I say, hey guys, my team, this is how we fulfill the service that we're going to do. So let's imagine it's just, we're going to, you know, build out a CRM for somebody, marketing automation system. So we turn over here and we say, okay, great. They purchased this. Here's everything that's included. Here's how we fulfill it step by step by step. And I teach them how to actually fulfill it. We record it. We do a training system that I call play, pause, do. So as I create this in a video format, I literally tell the camera, hey guys, here's how you do this. We're going to do dot, 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 dot. Okay, great. Pause the video. I want you to go do the thing I just showed you how to do. Then come back, play the video again. We're going to go to the next piece. So then we teach the next thing. Okay, do this, 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 and this. Okay, great. Pause the video. Go do what I just told you. Then come back and play the video. Play, pause, do. And we do this over and over and over. And we do it until we see, hey, they can fulfill the service. Okay, great. We've got that. Now you guys take all this information and create an SOP. Not me, the team. You just learned how to do this from top to bottom. Now document it. So they take my video, they take screenshots, they document it in written form, which usually if they just take my video, they can use AI to convert it into text. And they do all those things. They create an SOP. Boom. Now we can put anybody into the fulfillment system. And in a matter of a day, they could learn the entire process. And that's how we do it on that point. Then you put somebody in operations to oversee it. And that person's job is to make sure that everybody's doing what they say they're going to do. They do it on the timely manner. They're doing it at a cost effective, you know, for making sure we're staying profitable and all those things. So that's how I do it.
I love it. Great system. And you even put a system in place for how do you create your system. I love it. That's awesome. So what is your favorite of your businesses today? I mean, it's kind of like asking you which of your kids is your favorite.
I know, but that's not fair. That's not fair.
Which
at all.
One would you like to talk a little bit about here for a couple of minutes?
You know, I think the one that we talk about the most is probably the virtual assistant company, because it's the one that creates all of the leverage. So any other business that we have is created because we have a virtual assistant services company. And everybody who operates each of the companies that I have are virtual assistants from the Philippines. So my ops director, who runs each of the companies, she oversees literally every division and department of every business. She's based in the Philippines. Then we have finance team, Philippines. Our sales team happens to be the sales directors here in the US, but he's still outsourced. But I mean, our HR team is all in the Philippines. Our sales and market, you know, our marketing team is all in the Philippines. Every piece of content that I create is not created by me. I don't edit anything. I don't do any of that stuff. The Philippines do it. And so, the virtual assistant services company has been fantastic because I've given other people the opportunity to do exactly what I do, which is build businesses that are run by virtual assistants. And we just have the perfect system for it. So we have a projects on demand service that you could pay, you know, you want 40 hours a month, you could pay $597 and you can submit any task that you want. You need somebody to update your database. You got that. You want somebody to do graphic design, video editing, list building, copywriting, CRM management, marketing automation systems, landing pages, whatever. You can just submit tasks and have them do it. And you get a block of hours you can use for a month. And you can just re-up that whenever you're out. Then we also have dedicated virtual assistants, which is I want one person to work inside my business and work for my company. And so we provide the VA, but we manage everything on the back end. So you don't have to worry about trying to send money to the Philippines. You don't have to worry about, you know, the labor code over there and making sure people are congruent with that. We manage their HR, we manage their coaching, we manage, their, you know, medical benefits and all of those things. We do all of it. And then you just pay our company a fee and you get somebody who works within your business. And so those are kind of the two major, services that we offer. Then we have paid ads and lead nurturing and like call center type stuff. But yeah, so that's Level 9 Virtual.
I love that. So, if a person wants to work with you, how do they get in contact with you?
You can send me an email, joe@level9virtual.com, or you can just visit level9virtual.com. Top right corner, let's say book a call. You could jump on a call with our team and learn a lot more about how we can support you specifically. So the cool thing is if you book a call, it's not like a traditional sales call. It's a consultation. So we're saying, hey, of what you're trying to accomplish, where do we fit in to support you? Or are we just a bad fit and you need to do something different? And so that's kind of the benefit of it. It's very consultative. We're not trying to be, we don't really hard sell. You know, luckily we built a good enough brand and a reputation to where we get enough influx of business that like we have a policy. We just don't hard sell. We don't hard close people. And we just really want to find a way to be consultative. I love Jay Abraham as a sales coach, and he's very heavy into consultative sales and finding actual solutions that we can provide that are beneficial. They have, you know, huge upside for the client. And then the benefit is that they work with us. And so if we can make that happen, awesome. But if we're not the best fit, we literally have referral partners everywhere and try to send them to somebody that's got what they're looking for if we don't have it.
I totally love that. Well, I appreciate so much your little bit of insight here. I mean, there's hours and hours of stuff that we could unpack, but this is a great first start, and I appreciate having you here on the show with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I love all the things Joe's doing. I was remembering as I was putting this episode together, you know, we do the recordings previously and then put all of the different people together into one show. And I was remembering all of the encouragement that this show gave me and some of the cool ideas that I was having of doing, you know, both in my own business as well as some other things that I want to do. And that concept of bringing in some virtual assistants and stuff like that. I love the concept of a person who has multiple interests, and when they find something that's interesting to them, they just find a way to then also bring that out and share it with the world. I think it's a really cool look at you know, maybe a little bit more modern of a version, you know, especially with the VAs and stuff like that in there. Really, really fun, cool way to be able to run a business today and to be a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, let's take our first commercial break. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we take a modern look at business building. And yeah, you're going to see some things in here. You're going to be like, hey, I've been doing that for years. But you may also, as you listen to it, hear just a little bit of a twist as the kind of things that they're doing. And it'll also remind you that the applications, the systems, all the things that you had in place yesterday aren't necessarily wrong. They don't necessarily need to be changed, but they do need to be looked at. Make sure that they're still working and impacting and are as effective as they can possibly be as you move forward and you live and you thrive and you do business here today in the way that most effectively will impact the people that you're meant to serve. I hope you got some really great things out of the first segment. And now we have another guest that we're going to jump into right now to help us take a modern look at business building and how we can apply that to living as a thriving entrepreneur. Here's our next guest. Join me in welcoming Ben Johnson. Hey Ben, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here with us. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, I'm the CEO of Particle 41. We're a software development consultancy that loves accomplishing complicated digital projects.
And can you define for us in more detail what kind of projects are truly difficult versus the ones that just seem difficult to folks who don't know what they're doing?
Yeah, sure. Well, many people had digitally transformed several years ago. So one of the things we found ourselves in most often, especially for large businesses, is application modernization. So that digital transformation that you did in 2015, it's probably showing a little wear and tear, and we're really good at parachuting, jumping in behind enemy lines and ramping up quickly to figure out what needs to be done to bring your technology and your software into the future.
Versus just breaking out the duct tape and the bubble gum and trying to
That's
connect it
right.
together with the things that aren't compatible at all.
That's right. And I also do a fair amount of just good old-fashioned advisory, helping CEOs establish a path forward in this digital world, seeing what kinds of tools they're using and if there's a better way to, put them together to enhance their business and add value to their customers.
Now, are you finding yourself doing a lot of things with AI these days, or have you not really gone in that direction yet?
No, absolutely. So we're currently talking to all of our current clients about ways that they could leverage AI. And then, of course, that's also opening up new clients. Just about every business model is benefiting. Even our own software development practices are benefiting from the inclusion of AI. We're kind of doing an AI-assisted programming. And the great thing about our model is the savings that that creates is passed on to our customer, where a lot of project-based shops are probably able to leverage AI in the background, do more with less, and that margin goes in their pocket, and we're sharing the margin that AI gives directly with our customer.
For somebody who doesn't understand what you're meaning, how can you use AI to help you code better?
Sure. So what we do is we tell AI the general best practices and standards that we want to follow. We tell it a little bit more about the application that we're writing and how we want to structure that application. And then we're able to use AI to kind of advance the keystrokes, right? Give us words and characters on the page that are syntactically correct, and kind of scaffold in the application quicker. And then as we solve particular problems, as we start writing, that AI will watch our code and make sure that we continue to adhere to the best practices and standards that we said we would agree to. And that's just helping us move more quickly. We're not quite at like a place where AI would just write all the code. We still need humans with smart brains to think of the business problem and how code should be leveraged to solve that business problem. But we're at least using it as a really good watchdog around our cleanliness and making sure we're doing things as succinctly as they could possibly be done. And then when there's errors, we can ask AI what the meaning of that error is. The way I think of AI right now is problems that you would typically have to search Google 10, maybe even 15 times to find the right answer. Oftentimes, AI is giving you those in a single search.
From the other side of the equation, and this is maybe more of a personal question than anything any of my listeners would ever want to know, but does AI, has it gotten to the point where it can find the missing closing tag that is just driving you crazy?
Certainly. Yeah, certainly that has happened. Definitely when your eyeballs are not working, AI can definitely come in and save the day.
I can think of countless hours where it seemed all right and it just wouldn't work. And it ended up being a comma or a close caret or something silly like that. That just, I'm sure you've never experienced that before, Ben, but
No,
you know.
never. Never. All the code I write is perfect. The moment I strike it, but Yeah, for sure. It's definitely an extra set of eyeballs helping us to accelerate the practice of code writing.
So I think it's important, though, to also go the other direction with it and talk about the fact that it isn't just something where somebody who knows nothing about what they're doing could just come in and say, "Hey, Chat GPT, write me a, and then come up with like, the newest version of Halo or something, without knowing anything about coding."
No, there's still an intersection that the human is offering between the business and the business rules and what the business wants to accomplish. And then just some of the asset of skill still belongs to the human. The asset of manpower is being leveraged by the AI. So rather than maybe need 10 or 15 people on a particular project, the most skilled people can still do the work a little bit faster. So we're just finding that it takes less people to do some of the work, but not less skill.
And what kind of companies do you love working with?
I love working with any business. We like the mid-enterprise. We think that's an underserved area. Of course, large Fortune 1000 companies can go to the Accentures and the Deloittes of the world. We really love working with the 10 million to 100 million in revenue. We like working with folks that just want to see if they can get more out of their tech stack and their technology. And we like working with existing tech teams. A lot of our team members are trained in training, and we just like to be that kind of force multiplier. We have not only software developers, but we also have DevOps engineers that are really good at setting up the cloud. And then we also have data science folks that are really great about setting up data pipelines and getting all that data that's in a million different places into one place so you can re report accurately and see things. Like one of our clients just brought all their data systems together and they could literally see a 3-year journey of the client going and kind of seeing their getting introduced to their products, and then a little bit of time would go on. They'd have another exposure to their products, and then finally they'd become a purchaser. And then interact with the brand many times thereafter. And so we were able to show them that complete 360 view across about a dozen different data entries between mobile apps and online sites and even physical locations.
And for the people who aren't quite at that level yet, what are some of the pieces of advice you could give them that would help them as they're looking at their digital footprint currently and where they should go?
Sure. So one of the things we do is we just do a communication audit. What are you trying to do with your customer? What of the KPIs are you trying to move around? And what are the systems that you have currently in place and how can you leverage them better? So you don't have to be a big enterprise company to leverage our services. We're just also doing looking at your stack and looking at what you want to accomplish. Are you getting the most out of your CRM, do you have any points of duplicate data entry that you're trying to get rid of? And could we help you with that?
So for somebody who would like to work with you, how can they get in contact with you?
Direct email is great. Ben@particle41.com is a great way to just reach out. I'd love to chat with anybody. And then I'm of course on LinkedIn, Particle41 on LinkedIn. Would just love to hear directly from folks over email.
I love that. Well, before I let you go, give us some words of advice as to some things we should be looking out for that are either already here and have snuck up on us or are coming that we need to know about for our digital footprint.
I guess I'll give a shout out to a tool like Slack, that even if you're not already using it, you should be. Bring all your communication into one place, get your team out of email as a central point of internal conversation, and just see how you can bring all your different systems together in that one stream of activity. So I'll give Slack a big shout out. If that's not something you're using, you should definitely take a look at that.
I love that. Well, Ben, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
those of you that know me know that I've spent a lot of time and I love some of the cool things that we can do in technology. And, you know, sometimes the systems and the updates and the upgrades and the moving from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, just to name one that drove me crazy, sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad, but it keeps moving on. And we have to keep moving forward. Can you imagine if you were trying to run your computer, your company, and the computer technology for your company off of, you know, an IBM DOS machine that maybe had a line editor at best in it? You know, there's so many things that we take so for granted. And it's important that we keep those applications modernized, up to date, that we look at them. And sometimes they won't need to be fixed, and sometimes we'll need to bring somebody like Ben in and help us fix them, because things change so quickly. And maybe we need to add an AI element into it, or other really fun stuff that you can add in that helps you, at the end of the day, be able to better serve the people that you are meant to serve. And that's what it's all about. And, of course, that is the way we always need to look at business, but also updating that is very much a modern look at business building. And all of it comes together to help you be and live as a thriving entrepreneur. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about a modern look at business building. What are some of the things in the first two segments that we've looked at? Maybe you want to hashtag Thriving Entrepreneur and share some of the insights that you've had with us as we look at the things that we can do to quote unquote modernize what we're doing, to, you know, keep up with the times, but more importantly, to most impactfully make and have the effect for the people that we know we're meant to serve, so that their lives can be the best it can be, and we can help reach them where they are. And at the end of the day, I don't know that that's a modern concept, but that is most definitely the way to build your business. And that's based in the age-old phrase, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So as we take a modern look at business building, please remember that there are some of those tried and true things that we absolutely do need to keep in mind and to live with. We have one more really great guest here, another great modern look at business building and something that you might want to consider for your business. And I'm not going to tease you too much more about it. We're just going to jump right in to our next guest. Join me in welcoming Oshri Cohen. Hey, Oshri, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well. I'm doing very well.
That's amazing. So tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
How I show up in the world? People usually find out about me on LinkedIn because I don't shut up on LinkedIn, because I post incessantly and good content, I think. I don't know. I've got 17,000 followers so far. So, you know, I told my mother about how many followers I had, and she told me to call a doctor. And she didn't really understand why I thought I had so many people following me. But that's how people know about me off of LinkedIn as the founder of Red Corner, a CTO as a service company.
So tell us more about that. What does a CQ as a service mean?
CTO as a service means that you get a CTO with 20 plus years of experience, massive, massive amounts of experience in the startup world, in enterprise world, and whatnot, on a fractional basis. So you get in 1 or 2 hours per day, which is really more than you would ever need for technical leadership, way more than you would ever need. And that makes it affordable for many companies because your standard CTO will cost between 350 and 450 a year base salary, right? Having, you know, that's the 2 year total cost of ownership with our fractional CTOs, and will be much more effective because we only work 1 or 2 hours a day. We have to be really, really effective with the teams, right? We can't waste time. We can't take on anything for them. We have to train them and level them up. It's quite something, actually. We can talk all about it, but yeah, that's how it works. That's the concept.
I love that. So, does it work just as well for a really small, even startup company, or do you need to be at a certain level before it makes sense for you?
So we have different tiers for different tiers of companies. So we've got what's called a virtual CTO for pre-seed companies. So the virtual CTO is 1 hour a week because you're nothing, you have nothing yet, but you need an advisor. You need someone to tell you, hey, buddy, you're about to spend, you know, $500,000 on something. You should maybe get some technical advice, right? From someone who has no equity in your business, who just wants to help you, just advice. So what's important to know is that Red Corner only does advisory. We don't do coding, we don't do outsourcing, nothing. We advise companies, right? So there's the virtual CTO. It's 1 hour a week, but they get access to us 9 to 5 over Slack every day, which is kind of cool, actually, right? Then we've got the advisory CTO, which is 1 hour a day, and then the fractional CTO, which is 2 hours a day. So it goes from pre-seed to about two, three employees, and then once you've got your seed funding, you can go up to 5 to 10 employees with 1 hour a day, and then more than that, you would need fractional CTO at 2 hours a day.
That's amazing. And how many people do you have that are part of your company?
Right now, we've got 10 fractional CTOs on our bench, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Usually, the thing is that they're all contractors, right? Because they will not work full time for anyone because they don't want to. They're accomplished. They're financially independent. They are with us because they like solving problems, not because they need the money. That's the key differentiator here, right? They're not desperate for the money. So they want to work with us because they like the challenge. They like working with other CTOs. Yes, and they make good money as well. Obviously, that goes without saying.
That's great. So, what are the kind of things that, other than just time, what are some of the advantages of having the CTO be in there fractional as opposed to going out and hiring somebody that's going to grow with your company?
So, and here's the big misunderstanding about a CTO, right? The CTO needs to evolve with your company. The way you are as a pre-seed startup is not the way you're going to operate as a seed startup, is not the way you're going to operate as a Series A and Series B and Series C. It doesn't make sense to retain the same leadership. Very rarely does it make sense, and very rarely do you find the exceptional individuals who are able to rise above the fray. But even CEOs get changed. Like, yeah, you're the founder, but doesn't mean you can execute at the level that the company needs you to execute at. You're changed out and you stay on the board. So the CTO in the first generation of the company, and I say generation and not years, because in the startup world, a generation could be 6 months. You go from $0 of funding to 10 million. Suddenly you go from zero to one generation in 6 months. You've completely changed the kind of CTO you need. Snap of a finger, right? So at the beginning, you need your CTO to be an engineer, a coder. Excellent, because you don't need any management there. There's nobody to manage. It's 1 or 2 people. That's not management, right? You need him to be an engineer. Generation two, you need him to be a manager. Now there's a sizable team. There's five developers, maybe 10 developers. They got to manage multiple teams and whatnot. Generation three, you need them to be a leader. Now they're leading managers who are leading their own teams. Now you've got at least 50, 60, maybe 100 developers, right? And then generation four, you need them to be a visionary. So, Steve, I'm going to ask you a very simple question. What is the likelihood that that is the same person? And that's the problem. So startup founders are really, really quick to hire a CTO, give them equity and everything, and then turns out it's not the right person for them, right? Turns out that they've aged out, so to speak, because some people are great at the beginning, but they're not good at scaling, or they're not good at the business of technology, right? And so they keep giving equity and giving equity like it's cookies. Before you know it, they've given 5 and 6 and 10% of their business to different CTOs who have reached their maximum. So what I tell startup founders is, do not hire a CTO. Hire developers, hire marketing, hire sales. That's even more important. Get those sales in. And then hire a fractional CTO to guide and advise you, because that's all you're going to need at that stage, at the least.
So when you get into those broader and larger stages, does the, as you've outlined it, does the CTO ever really, I mean, different person, but is the time commitment really that much different?
It isn't, right? If you take a look at a full-time CTO, right? Like, I'm assuming you at some point you've had a full-time job, right? At some point, maybe in management, who knows, right? Let's be honest. How productive were you really? Like, were you doing 8 hours of hard work the whole time? Or maybe it was about 6 hours. And then there's 2 hours, those hours were BS meetings. So it's really 4 hours, right? That's the reality. And so a really, really strong fractional CTO can get everything done in 2 hours, because our job as leaders is not to do the work for our people, is to remove all of the friction points and all of the obstacles to let them do it themselves and give them the tools to do so. So a really strong leader is all about coaching and growing the team. They do that incessantly. They have to. The problem in startup land is the CTO eventually finds that, oh, well, I guess I need to take on some management, and I need to take on some coding, and I need to take on some of this. I'll take on all the little bits that I like to do. Great, fine. It's your prerogative. You're the boss, technically, right? But is that an efficient use of their time, right? I've met startup founders whose CTOs were doing customer service. That's it. They're just doing customer service. I'm like, well, why are you paying this person 450K a year? Like, can I answer emails for 450K a year? Trust me, I'll do a better job. So, and I'm not being facetious. I'm actually taking on that client soon enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think of a startup company that I actually worked with. This is, right back in the late 90s, right around 2000, just before then.
There were startups back then?
Yeah, internet space. I was working with them. I wasn't a startup, but that's a whole different story. the person that they brought into their CTO literally had a cooler full of beer underneath of his desk. Well, or wine, depending on what the day was, but as much of his day was about drinking as it was about working.
Oh
So
my gosh.
I know exactly what you mean.
Bro culture. I call that bro culture, and that is not a very good place to be in. Bro culture very, very quickly becomes offensive to many people and very quickly becomes a toxic environment. Yes, we all drink beer from time to time, but you know what? It is what it is, right? So it can't be part of your identity as a company, that's for sure. And there's CTOs that I've advised, I'm like, do not do that. Because I'm like, buddy, what if you have people that don't drink alcohol, women that might be, pregnant, or people with dietary restrictions? You can't make alcohol as part of your whole shtick,
Oh yeah, well that was a real interesting company. Needless to say, they're not around anymore. So, that pretty much tells that whole story now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, well let's talk about what kind of people you would really love to work with and how they can get in contact with you.
So the people that I like to get, the people that are most compatible with my service are the founders and businessmen, because I don't only work with startups, right? And businessmen and CEOs that want to level up their engineering teams. Because a lot of times, because engineering management and engineering leadership is not taught in school. There's no certification for it. There's no book. Well, there's a couple of books, but it's something that you learn, through while being in the trenches. You need to have those battle scars. You need to have screwed up a couple of times and whatnot to really learn your lessons, or have had a fantastic mentor. And so a lot of the people that are in engineering management should not be in engineering management. That's the reality. They should just simply not be in engineering management. And that's it. That's the key here. The founders and the CEOs and whatnot need to be the people that want to see their company level up, right? They have a problem with their software, or they have a problem with delivery. And of course, the startups who want to save money because they're smart, right? But you give someone $10 million suddenly because they pitched you an idea for an email client. Takes a lot of maturity to not burn that cash on foosball tables.
And a lot of companies have
Oh
yeah,
my, you
so
have, oh Lord, you have no idea. Or maybe you do have an idea. I don't know. It's bad. It's bad out there sometimes. I call that startup land thinking. It's not real world, it's startup land.
well, yeah, I understand it all too well because I lived through the whole dot-com rise and explosion and actually worked with one company whose pitch was, we will lose your money slower than any of the other companies that are pitching you right now.
Oh, I've seen that happen so often. Oh my. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, where would they go or how would be best for a person to begin to engage with you?
Redcorner.io. That's it. Redcorner.io. I get a lot of traffic there. I've got a YouTube channel also with some fun videos. Very informative. I just started. And on LinkedIn, Redcorner as well. So it's you look up fractional CTO, that's what you're gonna find. You're gonna find me usually.
I love that. Well, just before I let you go, give us, kind of the 30-second or 1 minute, whatever, elevator pitch on why a company really should have a fractional CTO versus bringing in some, amazing, awesome guy.
Because you deserve a CTO that evolves with your company. Working with Redcorner means that we will give you and assign the CTO that is at the right time and the right profile for the right phase and growth of your company. We will interchangeable. We will change them out as needed. And because we are not a placement agency, we are a firm. And we have something called the Council of CTOs. Imagine, Excalibur and all of that, right? All around a circular table. That's the Council of CTOs. Every week we sit together and we talk about the challenges and the state of every client. And then we work together as a team. So you hire Red Corner, you're getting 200 years of experience, because the only CTOs that are allowed have to have 20 years of experience minimum, right? Or have done something extraordinary to validate being on the council. And so you've got an AI mind and a data science mind and a data engineering mind and a programming mind and a scale mind and so on and so forth, all advising a primary fractional CTO, which is something that is not found anywhere in the world. This service does not exist anywhere else.
I love the concept of it. That's awesome. Well, Ashri, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve.
Having your suite C-suite work for you on a fractional basis is actually a really great idea. I remember the first time I heard about fractional CFO was the first one that I heard about. But again, when you're talking about that higher level, I was having this conversation with actually a client the other day and was helping them understand that when you're talking about some of those really high level things, the vision casters and the person who needs to make sure that the team is going in the direction that it needs to go, but not shouldn't be, if it's set up right, shouldn't be the person that's actually doing the day-to-day work. Really using them on a fractional basis can be a really great thing for you. They can come in with a ton of skill and expertise and really be able to give you some great insights and then look at what you were doing and tell you, you know, here's what worked, here's why, what didn't work, didn't work. You know, I know myself when it comes to working as a fractional CMO or helping folks with their books and stuff like that, I very much love to come in, you know, and give a person an hour or a couple hours or an hour every other week or those kind of things and really come in and say, hey, look, here is what you're doing in your marketing. Here is the plan, you know, outlining a plan that sometimes has things in it that people didn't even know that they could or should do. And a lot of times it's just really practical things that somebody just needs to set a system down for. But then the day-to-day person who is really invested in that, they only know what they know. They only have the experience that they've had. You know, I mean, I've been doing this for 37 years. I'm not asking somebody to know everything that I've learned over the course of the 37 years. But a lot of times, you know, that right person in place for your business can really take that ball and run with it. And all they need is just that little bit of guidance. And so virtual fractional C-suite employees like, you know, Ashri was talking about with his company, I think they're amazing. And I really think a lot of us need to look at how we could better use the resources and the money from our company to get the really high level chief executives that we need to oversee things, but have them then come in more and be that overseer that they should be, rather than hiring some real high end C-suite person and expecting that they're going to be the ones that are going to be, you know, doing the basic day to day programming or you know, doing of social media posts or things like that. I think it's a great look at modern business building and all that kind of stuff. But I think more importantly, it's about understanding who you are, what you're really good at, and then, as a friend of mine's book says, stop doing the stuff that you suck at. Do what you're good at. Bring in people that are really good at doing what they're good at. Empower your employees to become really good at what they do. And then give them the ability to really run and do and be all that they are. They are, and you are, uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose, and the world needs you. And I hope you express that to your people as well and help them feel empowered and know that you've got their back and that you're excited to see them live and exceed and thrive in all that they're doing as we work this company together and we live as a thriving entrepreneur. Until we're together again next time, I hope that you have an amazing, great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. go to asksstevekid.com and schedule a time to talk today.